for folks moving here, yeah, take your time, get to know the country, and think about your language a lot. You know, what does the word regenerative mean? And yeah, never stop planting.
So the question is this: how do regenerative-minded change makers like us, who are creating projects designed for environmental wellness, social equity, and the security of future generations, accomplish our missions in ways that maintain our ethics without leaving us struggling to survive? This is the question I designed this podcast to answer. Welcome to Regeneration Nation Costa Rica. I'm your host, Jason Thomas, and I've been exploring innovators around Costa Rica to discover what they're doing to contribute to a regenerative nation. Join me on the journey as we explore who's doing what to bring us toward carbon neutrality and prosperity in a new world that prioritizes regenerative agriculture, business models that value the 8 forms of capital, communities designed for local resilience, and government initiatives that prioritize the well-being of the people as well as the planet. In this episode, we meet with Scott Gallant, a permaculture consultant at Porvenir Design. I took advantage of the pragmatism he's developed in his years here to explore some of the pitfalls he's seen with foreigners building large-scale developments. We also explore ways he guides his clients towards transmuting those potential problems into solutions. Through his design and consultation work, Scott often finds himself inviting his clients to slow down and simplify their visions. Scott practices what he preaches, and we get into some of the ways he applies the holistic context approach to his own business. He also describes his experiences starting and operating a business in Costa Rica, along with the advantages and disadvantages of doing things by the books. The second half of the interview gets really interesting as we discuss ways he trains new landowners how to be mindful of the context they're building in. This includes setting reasonable expectations for your laborers and investing into appropriate education for them, especially if you want them to do things in a way they aren't familiar with. There's a lot to unpack here, so let's get right into the interview. Hello and welcome to Regeneration Nation Costa Rica. I am Jason Thomas, and I have the pleasure of joining today with Scott Gallant, a permaculture designer and educator with nearly a decade of experience working in Central America. He's the co-founder of Porvenir Design, which is a landscape firm specializing in productive landscapes. And he graduated from Wabash College in 2008 with a degree in economics. Scott was the farm manager at Rancho Mastatal for 9 years, and he worked with diverse projects such as VersaLand, Open Source Ecology, Project Bonafide, and many more. And he's developed his skill set in permaculture design along the way. So, Scott, thank you for joining us today, taking some time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Jason. Nice to meet you. And it's fun to hear my bio read out loud and think about things that happened so many years ago. Just different projects and things like that. Yeah, appreciate the introduction.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate being able to introduce you. I've heard about your works for, gosh, as long as I've been in the country. When I first got here, I was looking at, when we were living here, I was looking at Rancho Mastatal and some of the first efforts you guys were making to get on the map and invite people into this lifestyle. And we were doing a very similar thing where I was at Finca Fruition. And now many of my permaculture designer friends here are sending me podcast interviews. Like, you got to check out Scott Gallant and what he's doing. You got to get him on your podcast. And it's like, all right, well, let's do this. So here we are. So tell me, how did you go from studying to get a degree in economics to developing a passion for regenerative agriculture and ethnobotany and community developing? And you wrote down here reskilling, which I'm also very curious about. How'd you get here?
I think it was mostly luck, but I came from a fairly conventional Midwestern background, a small town in Ohio outside of Cincinnati, and kind of grew up playing in the woods, picking sweet corn in high school for money. You know, my friends and I, we would drink shitty beer, listen to country music. There was pickup trucks involved. And throughout all of that, I didn't really have any view of a wider world. Everything was quite like, this is the path you go on. And it wasn't through any pressure from my family or anything like that. It just was, this is what it was. And ended up at this amazing small school, Wabash College, which is an all-male university, 850 students, kind of a weird experience, as you can imagine, 850 guys for 4 years. And yeah, the program that really resonated me really just from like, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money doing this was the economics program. And so dove into that and I did well. I had a job offer out of university that I was smart enough, fortunate enough to put on hold. And I went out west to work for a conservation organization and did that for 5-6 months out in Colorado, basically building trails in national parks. And that was the first kind of cracking open, the unfolding of, it was like, oh, there's more potential in this world. I felt that I finally had mentors. I realized there was people who were living in tents for years, hiking, you know, 300 mile long trails around the United States, backpacking throughout the world. I was like, okay, I can do all of these things. And was fortunate enough to meet a woman who became my partner for about 10 years or so when I was out there. And we decided to go and learn Spanish. And we did that by hitchhiking from the US-Mexico border and ended up eventually making our way to Costa Rica and beyond, but settled in Costa Rica, obviously. It was never the plan. And we ended up at a project, a well-known project here called Rancho Mastatal, where we became kind of the apprentice coordinators, farm managers, and eventually became business owners there, socios with the current ownership group in Mastatal. And that was a place of great learning for me. It was a place of a lot of trust, a place to just like fully dive in, being really fully present. I don't think I had a computer or phone for years there. At least that's what my memory says, although I've learned to distrust my memory quite a bit. and in that process, really just fell in love with the act of putting a seed in the ground and watching it grow and interacting with that plant. And I think that was a big trigger for me. And fast forward a bit, many things changed. My relationship ended. My relationship with Mastatal has, at this point, has come to a termination. And about 4.5 years ago, 2017, founded Porvenir Design with my business partner, Sam Kenworthy. And I moved out here where I'm at now, which is the kind of the San Carlos area. I'm about 25 minutes from La Fortuna. And the last 4 years have really been trying to figure out how to create a livelihood practicing permaculture design. We do some education, but our work is really focused on, yeah, this word design, like what does that mean? And yeah, that's the medium length version of how I got to this desk here now. But basically, you know, I've been here now for 4 years, trying to make this business work, make the livelihood work, grow the business, and really figure out how we apply permaculture as a design practice, and specifically here in Costa Rica. Although we've worked elsewhere, and we will continue to, it seems like there's a massive demand here in Costa Rica. The influx of people moving here is from like the COVID times and all the things that are going on in the rest of the world. And so that's basically where our little world revolves around at the moment. And yeah, trying to put permaculture into practice and help other people do that.
Hey there, fellow visionary leaders, retreat hosts, and community builders. I got a special resource for you. Are you managing a project that has communally used spaces? Would you like to enhance their sense of harmony and clarity for both members and visitors alike? The Community Living Agreements training is for you. Discover how to craft agreements that enhance interactions, reduce conflict, and build a stronger community spirit. It's not just a rule book you'll be creating, it's a living document that makes your project a joy to interact with. Head to regenerationnationcr.com/CLA to access the recordings. To save 20%, use the coupon code PODCAST. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/CLA, and the coupon code is PODCAST. Sharing communal spaces is better with clear agreements. Awesome. Well, you know, one of the things I definitely want to get into your work with growing food in the tropics and what you're doing with your clients in this, with this concept, the holistic context, and learn more about that and how you're particularly working with your clients. And part of what I really like to do with this podcast is to not just teach about regenerative agriculture, which there's a lot of information about that, really. I kind of like to go a little bit deeper into what it takes to run a business in Costa Rica and a little bit about your journey coming as a foreigner, just kind of giving it your best, starting off in whatever way you started. And then you begin and you develop yourself as a professional where you are now. So some of the people listening to this have businesses in Costa Rica, or they're just beginning their regenerative enterprise. And there's learning curves that we don't see coming, right? We don't know what we don't know. So can you share a little bit what you've learned in the process from that angle of developing yourself as a professional in Costa Rica?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's been a massive learning curve. There was no blueprint, just learning how to run a business in this country with the bureaucracy, which is a real thing. you get deeper into it, you're like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, there's some tricky things here. It's not, there's no part of the government here that's designed to encourage entrepreneurship. That's a thing we've run into just repeatedly. The main thing I always recommend to people that I still find to be the foundation of our team's success is that when my business partner, Sam Kenworthy, and I started the business, we took the time to create what you mentioned, which is our holistic context. And so really the like, why are we doing this? What is the purpose and how do we get to that purpose? And holistic context is a specific tool that comes out of holistic management and has evolved, and there's iterations of it. But it is about how do you achieve the life you want? And so Sam and I took time to clarify that. We took time to put on paper that this business, and I'll simplify it, but the business exists so Sam and I can make a livelihood so that we can afford our own little piece of land here in Costa Rica, and then hopefully slow down, do less, and perhaps the business can do that for other people as well. And so I think that makes us a little bit different than other businesses, NGOs that I see in this country, where maybe their mission is to, you know, reforest 1,000 hectares or teach everyone how to grow food. And those might be kind of supplementary goals of ours, or they would be what we would call enabling actions, or like the things we have to do to achieve this primary goal. But we started this to make a livelihood so that we can live a simple life. And I personally love that. Obviously, we came up with it, so I like it. But I love it because it feels very transparent, and it's this great reminder that so we can always come back to that. Are we moving closer to this? And that was the first thing we did. We put a lot of time into that, and it's a living document. We just, now that our team is 4 people, we've revisited it. We're trying to make sure it resonates with everyone on our team. With that foundation in place, it felt like it allowed everything else to work. The other thing that I think we did right away that has allowed us to grow, to take on bigger clients, is that we formalized the business immediately. We immediately inscribed the business. We were paying taxes from day one, and we could give official receipts from, you know, right away. My residency and work permit in this country is based on our business, and what we do professionally. That's an expensive route. It takes a lot of time. There's a lot of bureaucracy behind it. And I think it allowed us to really separate ourselves from, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of playing in this realm, trying to offer services, thinking about it. Maybe they're not all in. And I think it gave clients more confidence to reach out to us, and then, you know, to connect with us over the long term, knowing that this is, like we're here, we're all in, we have a team, et cetera. Those are the two big things that I think we did, I don't know if different than other people. It's a tiny country, there's not many of us, But they feel like they give us a really strong foundation for where we are today.
I'm really glad you said that. It's something I've been talking a lot more about. We went at it differently with my project that I started down here, and we just kind of went at it. We were out in the hills, and we didn't pull permits and all of that stuff right away. And we just started tacking stuff up, and you figure like, oh, when we're ready, oh, when we have more budget, oh, when we're, you know, but really it gets harder and harder to pedal back once you've got so much built. And, and especially, you know, it's one thing for, you know, just tacking up some, you know, temporary structures for people. But when you're really, you want to advertise yourself, you want to put yourself out there, you want to be in the local papers, you want to work with local, businesses and landowners. So yeah, I'm really glad that you, shared that about just doing that due diligence immediately and playing the game because, you know, yeah, it's a bureaucratic country. And there's a lot of taxes. And while I do think more of that money should definitely go into creating more entrepreneur training for locals and make it easier for small businesses to start and survive, there's more incentives that I've seen in like the United States and other places where, you know, the small businesses are incentivized. Absolutely. And doesn't feel to be the case here. But beyond that, the taxes and the bureaucracy, they serve a function. You know, there's a lot of people in this country that are employed because the country taxes importation most than anything. However, they tax the small businesses a little heavier than maybe they should. But then that money goes to the bureaucracy, which basically keeps people employed and shifts the economy in the country compared to some of the other Central American countries that both of us have been through.
It's an interesting conversation, and we at the beginning of the business, we talked about it a lot. Like, all right, let's make sure everything is correct. And we made that choice. I don't know if we would make it again. I think as we've grown in the business and we've run into different bureaucratic things, it's like, oh, okay, now I understand why like none of my Tico friends pay this like specific tax for their business. They think we're crazy. And there's an ethical piece as well that I feel very strongly about as a foreigner here of participating. And it's not a perfect system, but no place is. And so I do struggle when I find that people have been here for 10, 15 years and they still don't pay taxes. I don't know. It's a tricky thing. It's not like a black and white conversation at all. I do wish though that people moving here were more paid more attention to the implications of that though. And I think people have to now. The country's getting better at enforcing its laws and regulations, and that's the reality.
Yeah, it's definitely not a straightforward answer. You know, what's better and where to skip the course. But it's not like, it's like that everywhere you do business. You know, even in the United States, you know, yeah, you want to register this and that, protect yourself among many other things and participate, like you're saying, be part of. And there's value in that. You do build trust with some of your higher end clientele oftentimes, which opens doors for you that aren't open otherwise. And yeah, you want to be aware of what you're participating in and make choices where you might choose not to. It's never black or white, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So in building the business here in Costa Rica, now you first got involved in conservation in Colorado, and then you started applying it here. Did you do much study when you got here before you started implementing, or did you just kind of come here and try to start doing it and learn as you went?
Yeah, I had a couple moments on projects in like Mexico, Nicaragua, doing volunteering, you know, kind of the wolf backpacking thing that I suppose still exists, although I'm quite disconnected from that. That was really more superficial. There was moments where I was introduced to books and had some of those kind of aha moments like, oh, wow, okay. I didn't realize, like, I can still remember one reading a book, I think Animal Vegetable Miracle by Barbara Kingsolver, and talking about how milk doesn't go bad. It just becomes like sour cream or sour cheese or something. And these little moments like, ah, how come no one told me this? Like, think of all the milk I've thrown out. And so there was a process, a journey But it was really arriving at Rancho Mazatlán as an apprentice. I think it was 2010, although I could be wrong with that exact date. And then just diving in there and really just being in and on the land every single day without distractions, with an amazing library, and continue to regularly take courses. I've studied in the U.S. with workshops, usually more specific targeted workshops or with teachers that I'm really interested in hearing and listening to. And then starting to apply this professionally really came probably 6 or 7 years after I had been on the land. And so I had built up a deep understanding of that particular place and how it worked in that climate, its context. And then people that were coming through that project and workshop started asking me. And at the time I teamed up with another member of Rancho Mazatlán to do this work. They started asking us to go to their projects and do design consultation, et cetera. And that was kind of do a couple things every year, dipping our toe into this with much caution. But it became clear that there was a demand for this. And as we formed the business, it's really been learning. It's such a different thing to know how to plant trees or identify fruit trees and these different agricultural methodologies.
Hey there, fellow visionary leaders, retreat hosts, and community builders. I got a special resource for you. Are you managing a project that has communally used spaces? Would you like to enhance their sense of harmony and clarity for both members and visitors alike? The Community Living Agreements training is for you. Discover how to craft agreements that enhance interactions, reduce conflict, and build a stronger community spirit. It's not just a rule book you'll be creating, it's a living document that makes your project a joy to interact with. Head to regenerationnationcr.com/CLA to access the recordings. To save 20%, use the coupon code podcast. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/CLA. And the coupon code is podcast. Sharing communal spaces is better with clear agreements.
Compared to design work, it's a completely different skill set. So I've really studied design in the last 3 years and really studied facilitation in the last few years. And only now do I feel like, okay, I've certainly not mastered those things, but now I have time and space. So more confidence perhaps would be the correct word, that I can come back and start studying again more of the agricultural side of things, earthworks, different centropic farming methodologies, animal systems, etc. So now it comes full circle a bit where I'm ready to go deeper on a personal level. And I think I can speak for our team. It feels like we're in that cycle together, which is really beautiful. So that's been a bit of how the studies happen. Workshops, I found great mentors, a lot of books. I read a lot. I should have been a librarian. I like to recommend books. It's a weird habit I have that some people appreciate. And yeah, that's been how I've gotten to this stage.
So what do you find is unique about doing design work in the tropics, in Costa Rica, say, even instead of the tropics in general? What have you found? And I know that's still an open question because we've got lots of different microclimates here and that changes a lot of the design work. But maybe even in context of people listening who might be new to Costa Rica, having their land project and they haven't quite reached the point, those learning curves yet. They haven't figured out what they haven't figured out yet. And what's unique about designing in the tropics that maybe a lot of people miss?
The biggest difference from my work that I've done in the States, which I've worked on farms and done design work in the US, is that most of the time here, the landowners are not the ones doing the physical work. And there's plenty of exceptions to that, but it's pretty across the board, like very few landowners here, foreigners moving here, I'm going to generalize, are grabbing a weed trimmer or are working with a machete for 5 hours in a morning. That's a big difference. And so who are you designing for? You're designing really as a liaison between the owners and then the people that are on the ground. And so the owners might have some vision and dream, but can the folks that are on the ground doing the actual work, might be a set of volunteers, but it could just be some, you know, a local cuadrillo, local, team of ticos. And so you're designing for them as well. That's a big distinction from the States and from, I think, more temperate climates. Use the word developed countries, where cost of labor is higher. I think it's probably, the biggest reason that that is how it is. That's a really big distinction. The other thing that we notice, and we're working not exclusively, but we work a lot with larger projects, developments, intentional communities. The permitting process here, I don't know if it's more complex than the States or other places, but it feels more opaque to really understand what you can and can't do legally. And so we find a lot of people bump into, they think they're going to be able to do something legally when in the end they can't do that. And, hopefully we're catching that early. We're not always able to, or we're not brought in that in time. That's something that I see happening a lot. I think is a really big learning curve for people on a design level, is understanding, simple things, but, restrictions and setbacks. If, the example I'll give that happens a lot is somebody finds a piece of property and they're excited because it's full of springs, these nacientes. This is cool. You're all excited. Well, it's a complex thing. A naciente, if it's registered, has to have a legal setback. You can negotiate that setback. That's a whole process. If your Spanish isn't very good, you probably can't. You probably have to hire somebody to negotiate that setback. And if you want to build legally, you need water. Okay, there's maybe four different ways you can have that water. One would be that naciente, but then you have to register it. But that setback might mean you can't build then where you want to build. And so it's this jigsaw puzzle that people, they get in trouble. And I think people can be quite deceptive on the seller side of, or uninformed, both, where you're, you can do that on this property. No problem. You can subdivide. There's a giant spring. Everyone can have water. And in reality, it's much more complex than that to get a project to go. And things here move slow. People just have to recognize that, as soon as I hear somebody like, oh yeah, I need to be selling these lots. I just bought this property. I need to sell these lots in, in a few months. I'm like, no, impossible. like sure. Sometimes it happens, but no, it's pretty much impossible. Triple the amount of time you think it's going to take, especially when you're starting out. And that's something we run into a lot in our design work. It's a hard thing. It's tricky. We studied it very specifically. It was a class we organized on due diligence with a developer and a hydrologist when we started the business, so we could learn the ins and outs of those things. Those are my two, the lessons that jump to my mind that I feel are really distinct here that are hard for people maybe to wrap their mind around. And I see mistakes in design. So I see other designers, and not a lot, but I notice people maybe creating designs without really applying the context of a place. And so in the centropic farming world, for example, which is quite a complex methodology, it's asking people to put together these really complex ecosystems. If you're just asking, I'm going to generalize here again, a campesino to do that, who maybe doesn't know all these plants, you might be setting up the client for failure or for struggles. And so really understanding that context is key in this place that we're so fortunate to live. Yeah.
So when you say that, one of the big differences that you see is that the people you're being contracted by aren't doing the work, and you are finding yourself as a liaison between them and their workers, or at least your design has to take into consideration that element. What are some of the common pitfalls that you find people falling into, or what are some of the common suggestions that you're making to help people bridge that gap of of understanding or approach?
I think we're always encouraging people to simplify and start smaller, you know, permaculture principle number, I don't know, 7 or something, right? Small, slow and small solutions. I find the ambition of projects to be unnerving sometimes. And the language people use around growing food, being self-sufficient, so many things, knowing that they're not the ones that are going to be tilling that soil up, hauling sacks of compost. That's a really interesting thing. It can be hard to find local workers that are fully dedicated in that same way, that, you know, they're getting paid usually government mandated minimum wages. It's, you know, 1,350 colones per hour, hopefully more, because what is that? That's like $2 per hour. And so we really talk with people about starting small, starting simpler. We really encourage people to invest in their workers, training, and not even so much the hard skills, like going to a course on organic ag or something like that, which is good. But there has to be some mental shift. And so having workers go to seed exchanges, potluck, see other farms, just little things, so they don't think that this vision of like some crazy regenerative ag is impossible or isolated. I don't know. There's this whole network. This country's full of people trying to do these things, rad people and all demographics, all levels of capital. And it's everywhere. You turn a corner and there's a little organic farm or nursery, right? It's really amazing. And so I think whoever's working the land, engaging them in that network, paying them to go to those things, like literally like, cool, we're going in the car, we're going to go visit these 3 farms today. We really encourage that. I see gran beneficios, like great benefits from that. So those are a couple of things that jump to my mind. And then the last thing I'll say that I see as a pitfall is, which is along the same lines, but people trying to do too much and not having clarity. And so, for example, we have this amazing client over in the Nosara area, and it's really interesting. They want to do all sorts of stuff. It's quite ambitious, and the client knows it. We've had these conversations. We really get along with the client. And they want to blend all the things. They want to blend the food forest and the conservation and the animals and the retreat center and the people that are living. And so that's their goal, which is a really challenging thing, because we're usually, in order to simplify, especially at the beginning, or we're fragmenting, which is opposite of what we want to do in a holistic approach. But in order to just achieve things and move projects forward, we have to break them into these smaller pieces. And this is the design process in action, right? Like sometimes we're putting things together, sometimes we're pulling them apart. We're zooming in on details and we're zooming out to the macro context, bioregion, country, etc. But we really encourage people to focus in and clarify their purpose. Like, why does this project exist? What are you trying to do here? And as soon as you're trying to be many things, it's going to be tricky. And you can maybe add those things in the future. We could even design in anticipation of those things in the future. You want an education center. Great. Well, let's, you know, we know we have this, you know, 1,000 square meters over here. Let's just leave that. Let it sit for the moment, designed by exclusion, knowing that you can revisit that in the future when things are more settled. There's more clarity, more feedback. Those are things that come to my mind, pitfalls, lessons, things that we talk about a lot with clients.
That's awesome. That's actually, I was listening to that and it's brilliant advice. It's wisdom. Mm. And obviously I'm speaking for a lot of people here, but I think a lot of people who intend to create a permaculture design for their project, they think like they have to design all of it at once. So it's like, okay, I'm going to design my 10-year plan which I'm actually going to, you know, it's going to take me twice as long to do half of it, really, but I'm going to design my long-term plan, and I know where everything goes, and I'm going to start putting the foundation for all of that right away. I mean, you know, we started with a similar mindset, and we were hosting PDCs at our farm, and students were designing parts of our farm in ways that they thought it would be cool as part of their design project. And it's so inspiring. They're like, oh yeah, let's put that in the design, you know? And then, yeah, you have all this design, and really to do it responsibly, you do one or maybe two things at a time. And it's really refreshing to hear you share that approach of segmenting instead of trying to be entirely holistic all at once.
Yeah. So we hear a lot in permaculture about, like, oh, you get a piece of land and you should camp on it for 12 months, right? For a whole year, see every day, every season before you do any acting, right? Observe, observe, observe. There's this other part to the principle of observe. It's observe and interact. And so I'm increasingly convinced that there's as much benefit to that observation as there is to starting something small, but beginning the action. And so this design process really has to be iterative and organic and ongoing. I think as long as there's a North Star, a clarity around the purpose, what we often call the holistic context, the quality of life that people want, then you're good in that process. You don't have to place everything on the map or know all the enterprises or who all the people, the stakeholders, the decision makers are if you have that piece clear. If you don't have that piece clear, the like, why are we here? Then the process can get waylaid really easily. And you usually notice that in projects when there's conflict, tension around small decisions. And this was something that, like, in my time at Masatal, we used to find with certain things, was we had these goats, for example, and I talked about this, and all my students have heard me talk about these damn goats we had at Masatal. You know, it was this beautiful system, but it was quite stressful. There was a lot of conflict around it, and that conflict became personal when really it was a structural conflict. It was a conflict around purpose. What type of education were we providing? You know, we were buying concentrado, we were buying GMO corn soy for these goats. It's totally against the ethics of our place, but it meant we could have these goats and goat milk, and student groups could experience milking a goat, which is a beautiful thing, but it certainly wasn't a regenerative system. Those are two different things. One's more experiential. One is like more cool. We're trying to regenerate the land and create a system. They both have their value, but we didn't know what we were trying to provide, and that conflict led to all sorts of conflict. And I see that in projects a lot. And that's when you start, if you're like, oh, they can't even decide like where to site the compost toilet, or if it should be a compost toilet or a biodigester, like things that, you know, are simple in some ways. But when I feel that energy, it's like, oh, okay, we're not sure why we're here. That's where we need to be working first before these other pieces.
I really like that. When I was listening to your other podcast interviews about the holistic context, it's something that I'm also working with in my private work. I apply the permaculture design principles and approach not to agricultural land management, but rather to people's entrepreneurial business model, right? So I offer entrepreneurial consulting there, and it's really the same thing comes in. It's like, okay, yes, we can let's start by laying out all the things you can want to do. But now let's think about, how do you want your life right now? How do you want your life next year? How do you want your life 5 and 10 years from now? And this is something that Ed Zadelman leaned into quite a bit in my interview with him. And it's really so crucial, because you can do all the stuff. And you can't do it all at once. If you try, you won't get any of it done well. And you'll do the third thing first, and then you'll be backpedaling because you didn't think like, oh, even though this was the most exciting and it really fits my ideals and my mural of what community is and rural living, and like I've been dreaming about this. It's like, okay, that you can get that, and to make that sustainable, let's actually slow down and look at the most practical thing that's going to not consume you while you're trying to orient yourself to your new experience of being an entrepreneur. So many people come down here with all these ideas and enterprises, as you say, and they have some skills, but maybe they're not trained entrepreneurs. They're not trained business people. And this is stepping back and really developing those skills and mindsets, and keeping simple steps, I think, is a really valuable thing to offer as a design consultant. Fortunately, we're going to have to close this conversation up, and it's gotten so juicy. I really want to get more into this stuff with you because you've got such great perspective and experience to share with people. Thank you so much for being really just raw and real with us about what you're seeing, because it's going to help a lot of people, Scott. Thank you so much.
It was nice to connect, and yeah, perhaps we can do it again and go deeper in the future.
No, that would be great. Hey, before we go though, let me just collect some info from you for people that want to learn more. For one, the holistic context, you said there was a lot to learn there. Where would you direct people first for that?
Yeah, there's a website called Holistic Decision Making. I would check out that and see what resources are available. That was put together by Dan Palmer, who unfortunately passed away about a year ago. So I don't know how active it is, but that was a really strong one for us as a tool, as well as his podcast called Making Permaculture Stronger. And that's where it was a really good tool for us as we created our own holistic context. The foundational text is Alan Savory's Holistic Management, A New Framework for Decision-Making book.
Okay. And speaking of books, you said that you recommend a lot of books for, let's say, people getting ready to like really design their land. Hopefully they haven't gone too far already. What is some of the best books that can get them off on the right foot and minimize their learning curve?
Yeah, there's a couple books I love. Toby Hemingway's Gaia's Garden is a kind of a classic in permaculture, and I think is a really nice introductory text. I really like Ben Falk's book, The Resilient Farm and Homestead. That's one I often recommend to people. And then all of the work from agroforestry.net, there's an overstory manual that they have. That's one that I find to be really, really useful for people.
Awesome. Thank you. And what about your own work? What's your website? You have any resources you offer people there? You have a face or social media? Where can we find you and learn more?
Yeah, our website is porvenirdesign.com. We have a blog that's fairly active, but the posts that we do are quite in depth. Our workshop page is up to date. We're offering maybe 4 or 5 workshops this year. We'll have one coming up in March, like 1 day Syntropic Farming Field Day. We have on the calendar a 2-day advanced permaculture design course that's created for people that want to think of it as like continuing education as permaculture consultants, designers, where we'll kind of dive deep into a lot of these topics. And then social media, my personal social media is at Scott Plants Trees on Instagram. And I go through phases of activity there. That's definitely where people can see what is happening in our professional world.
All right. Good news. Before we let you go, do you have any last pieces of advice for the regenerative movement in Costa Rica?
For folks moving here, take your time, get to know the country, and think about your language a lot. You know, what does the word regenerative mean? Never stop planting. That's always my advice to people. Like, this climate almost allows us to plant every day, depending on where we are in the country. And so how to keep connecting to this place that we live. One of the simplest ways is to put a seed in the ground, a plant in the ground, a stake in the ground every day. And that's what we always encourage clients to do.
All right, Scott, thank you for the words, for the support. I look forward to connecting more in the future. And let's get another interview as the time comes on. So I look forward to the opportunity to meet you in person one of these times. Next time I'm up in La Fortuna, I will definitely hit you up.
Perfect. It was great to connect, Jason. Thank you so much. Ciao.
Ciao. And that was Scott Gallant, a potent leader in the permaculture movement. Scott mentioned his blog at the end of the interview. He's an excellent writer who touches on many topics rarely discussed elsewhere. I encourage you to check it out. The biggest takeaway I'd like to restate is the importance of designing your projects with your laborers in mind. Setting your work team up with unreasonable expectations is a hasty and unhealthy practice. It's discompassionate. Investing into properly training your workers and the techniques you want them to implement is a far more efficient use of your time, money, and relationships than the more common approach of telling them to do something they only know how to do from a conventional lens and expecting it to meet your end goals. Hey, I'd like to thank you for caring enough about what you're doing to listen to the podcast as part of your personal development journey. If you know someone developing land in Latin America that would benefit from what Scott shared with us in this episode, consider passing it along to them. If they don't often listen to podcasts, no problem. We host all of our episodes on our website as well as on our YouTube channel. I also ask you to keep in mind that the show has a profile on a donation platform called Ko-fi.com. There's a donate button on most pages of the website. It always makes my day when I get an email announcing that someone cared enough to support the show. If sending cash in to help cover editing costs isn't accessible to you, send me a message and let me know what you like about the show. I love hearing from you. You can send an email to jason@regenerationnationcr.com. I'll get back to you personally. Until next time, have a holistic day. Hey there, hope you enjoyed the episode. Are you stewarding a land project and hosting guests? I've put together a unique tool for you and I'm giving it away for free. If you'd like to create a virtual tour of your farm or retreat center, my virtual farm tour guide is a step-by-step companion to showcasing your space in a whole new way. From choosing the right software to crafting easy-to-follow narratives, this free guide simplifies the process, ensuring your guests enjoy an immersive experience, whether you're home or away. Visit regenerationnation.com/VFT to access this free resource and start your virtual farm tour journey today. You've got a beautiful place. Let me help you show it off. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/VFT. Hey there, hope you enjoyed the episode. Are you stewarding a land project and hosting guests? I've put together a unique tool for you and I'm giving it away for free. If you'd like to create a virtual tour of your farm or retreat center, my virtual farm tour guide is a step-by-step companion to showcasing your space in a whole new way. From choosing the right software to crafting easy-to-follow narratives, this free guide simplifies the process, ensuring your guests enjoy an immersive experience, whether you're home or away. Visit regenerationnation.com/VFT to access this free resource and start your virtual farm tour journey today. You've got a beautiful place. Let me help you show it off. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/VFT.